Hi, it's Shauna Meyerson with the Yoga of War podcast, here today to talk about the pending ceasefire resolution and what it means for Israel and what it means for Gaza. First of all, thank you all for the love and support and concern in the wake of the Palisades fire. I came home last night and want to assure you that, thank God, I am safe and so is my home. I do hope you'll consider donating to ongoing relief efforts to help the thousands of families across Los Angeles who have lost absolutely everything. That being said, you may be wondering what the fires in Los Angeles have to do with the war in Israel. The easy answer is nothing. The fires in LA have nothing to do with the war in Israel. But tell that to the Jew-hating masses out there who are blaming even this catastrophe on Israel. If that shocks you, it shouldn't. If you've been paying attention for the last few decades leading up to this moment, Israel has also been blamed for the water crisis in Flint, Michigan, the George Floyd incident, and of course, 9/11, to name just a few. The blaming does not end, and don't be confused. This is anti-Semitism, period, end of story, hard stop, and we're seeing that again today with the people online who are actually claiming that the fires in Los Angeles are Israel's fault. Let me just add, Israel is actually sending fire consultants to Los Angeles to help with the cleanup and future prevention efforts. That being said, let's get back to the topic at hand. I am talking today about the situation with the hostage deal in Gaza and the proposed ceasefire. I know that the world has already been informed that this is a done deal. There's only two teeny tiny issues. Trump said it's a done deal. Biden said it's a done deal. Qatar said it's a done deal. The media said it's a done deal. However, as is typical of all of these negotiations, Hamas, as always, decided to add in more stipulations regarding the terrorists that are to be released in exchange for Israeli hostages after they signed the agreement and publicly announced that they agreed to the terms of the deal. Okay, so let's be clear. Hamas told the world yesterday that they agreed to the deal, and then they added additional terms having to do with how many prisoners would be released from Israeli prisons. Now, we've seen this happen over and over again, and because the Hamas playbook does not change, this is not the first conflict that we have seen this occurring. So let's be clear, this is all part of the Hamas playbook, and I am going to go into this deeper as we get into the segment. The second thing that's holding back this deal from actually being confirmed is the fact that Israel has not yet ratified the agreement. Now, they likely will finish the agreement. Originally, they were hoping to do it before Shabbat, which is Friday evening at sundown. But because Hamas threw this sort of wrench into the negotiations, that's been pushed back a day. So after the Israeli Security Council votes on this, there will be a full vote in Israel on Saturday evening after Shabbat, which means that originally hostages were meant to be released on Sunday, the first three, but now it looks like that will be Monday. Interesting, right? Because Trump said that there will be all hell to pay if the hostages are not released before he comes into office. Now, he comes into office on Monday. I'm not sure if that means that they will have the hostage exchange literally minutes or hours before his inauguration. But also the threat was that the hostages would be released, implying that it would be all hostages, not just a handful of hostages, which is actually what's on the table right now. Right now in phase one of the agreement, 33 hostages are meant to be released, at least 10 of which are known to be deceased. We don't really know the status of the other 23, but our thoughts and our prayers are that they are still living. So we'll get back to that as well. Now, I'm going to do my very best to unpack the broad terms of this agreement. It is a very intricate agreement with a lot of different stipulations. I'm just going to go over a few of the bigger ones and give my personal understanding of this very, very complex deal. The good and the bad. But let me be very, very clear. No matter what your priorities are, if it's a hostage release, if it's ending the war, if it's defeating Hamas, if it's ceasefire, if it's peace, there is still nothing simple about this deal for any party involved. That being said, I'm going to be speaking from the voice of the community that I know best, which is the pro-Israel community. I'll try my best to be as objective as possible, but anybody who knows me knows that objectivity is not necessarily my forte, and sometimes I do get a little bit emotional about these discussions. Let me start by saying that in the pro-Israel community, there is a very, very mixed response, from complete elation to absolute horror. If I wanted to put myself on that continuum, am somewhere on the horror side, but not all the way on the horror side, because every life saved is a universe. And so whatever hostages we can come get home, I want them home. I personally believe we should hold out until all 98 remaining hostages are released. But as it turns out, nobody consulted with me on this. So perhaps the powers that be know more than I do about what is best for the nation. That being said, to preface this conversation, I want to start by pinpointing what I see as the underlying problem in all of this, which is you don't negotiate with terrorists. Okay, when you sit across the table from a terrorist organization, first of all, it legitimizes them, okay? That they are worthy of sitting across the table from you, and that they are, that they're legitimate. It also empowers them, right? If you refuse to come to the table because you don't negotiate with terrorists, which most countries don't, as a matter of policy, then you are giving them bargaining power. Now, keep in mind who we are giving bargaining power to, okay? These are the Hamas terrorists who started this war with the massacre of October 7th, okay? Since then, so many people have forgotten about that incident and just chalk this up to a general war and wonder who's gonna win, Hamas or Israel. Keep in mind that Hamas started this with the genocidal intent of destroying and killing as much of Israel and as many Israelis as possible. And so all concessions made by Israel are simply, in my opinion, a reward for terror. So the third reason why you don't want to negotiate with terrorists, and I'm sure there's more, I'm just naming three, is that it incentivizes them to inflict more terror, okay? For anybody who knows, and by now probably everybody's heard of, if you didn't know it when it happened, the Gilad Shalit deal, wherein 1,027 Hamas prisoners, terrorists, were released from Israeli jail in exchange for one Israeli soldier that was being kept hostage in Gaza, okay? As you all probably know by now, among those 1,027 terrorists was this guy called Yahya Sinwar, okay? You might know him as the mastermind of the October 7th massacre. What you may or may not know is that Israel actually saved his life while he was in Israeli prison because he got a brain tumor, cancer, and Israel treated him and saved his life. I want you to contrast that with what Hamas does with its hostages, who, by the way, are innocent civilians. Its preferred methodology is to just kill them. And I think enough people are not really connecting those dots. Everybody's saying, oh, well, these really hostages may be alive, they may not be alive, as if that is the beginning or the end of the story. It's not. It's not. The fact that this is the way that Hamas deals with hostages, and by the way, Israel does not take hostages, okay? This exchange is between things like babies and terrorists. There's one terrorist who's gonna be released who murdered an entire family in their home. So let's be honest about what this exchange deal is really about. So going back to the incentivization, if Hamas knows that for every person, Israeli person, that they kidnap, they can get hundreds or thousands of criminals, of terrorists, back and released, well, then they're going to take it. Likewise, I know that recently the U.S. gave more than $1 billion to Iran to release 5 American captives. So what is the message that it sends to Iran, particularly when they're in such financial straits? Well, let's kidnap more Americans and we can make billions of dollars more, which, by the way, can be used for terrorist infrastructure, not just for Iran, but also for its proxies across the Middle East, such as Hamas, such as Hezbollah, such as the Houthis, and so on. And so on and so on. Overall, this ceasefire, to be honest, is little more than very broad-ranging rewards for the genocide Hamas unleashed on Israel on 10/7 in exchange for some Israeli hostages. I would love to give you a number. Remember, this is a multi-phased deal. And remember what happened in the last deal. It broke down before the agreed upon number of hostages were released. This is incredibly par for the course. So keep that in mind. Any Israeli concession, and this whole entire deal is Israeli concessions, represents a win for Hamas. So where do I begin? I'm sorry if I'm a little bit all over the place because this agreement is all over the place. Let me start with Donald Trump. For many of us, this deal, which has been forced upon really both sides, but I'm going to say Israel because that's the side that I'm most familiar with, by Donald Trump. Honestly, to me and to many in my community, feels like an absolute betrayal because the pro-Israel community played such an instrumental role in getting him elected. Now, before he's even taking, before he's even been inaugurated, he is trying very hard to accomplish what Ronald Reagan accomplished with the Iran hostage crisis, which is to get all is not going to happen. The most that's going to happen is 3 out of 98. But his goal was to scare Hamas into releasing all the hostages before he took office, just like happened with Reagan, really hours before he took office. Again, there may be 3, and 3 is wonderful. I will take 3 live hostages any day of the week, but by no means will we have 98 freed hostages. And I want you to once again keep in mind what it means to be holding 98 hostages, every single one of them a litany of war crimes, and honestly the main reason this war is occurring in the first place. Ask any IDF soldier, and the thing that drives them is to release those hostages, even at the risk of their own lives. These hostages mean everything to Israel and to the Jewish people. Now, so many people are so quick to discount that and say, yeah, well, there's only 100 and there have been tens of thousands, according to the Hamas Ministry of Health, of Gazans who have lost their lives. This is not a matter of morality or proportionality. Understand that also in World War II, millions of Germans and Europeans lost their lives because it was a fight for good and evil. And unfortunately, that is how war works. These 100 hostages are the reason that the war is continuing today, and they could have been released by Hamas at any moment in time, including right now, if they really wanted to end the war. But instead, what Hamas chose is to use its own people, as you know, as human shields, as human sacrifices. This is not news. This is not my opinion. This is the words of Hamas. Because the more civilian casualties they have on their side, the more they win the fight for public opinion, and the more the world turns against the only Jewish state, which A, is fighting for security along all of its borders, wherein terrorists are infiltrating everywhere, and 2, they want to get their hostages home. Okay? These are hundreds or thousands of people in these hostage families who, for I think it's 472 days now, have had no idea if their loved ones are alive, dead, sick, well, anything. They don't know anything. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the torture? So getting back to Donald Trump, for those of you who don't know, he put pressure on both Hamas and on Israel and said that this deal must be completed before he comes to office on Monday. Now, I know Joe Biden wants to take credit for this deal. I'm not sure I would want to take credit for this deal if I were he, but that's what he has chosen to do. And granted, he has provided the framework. He definitely did play that role. This framework has been in place for more than half a year. And as you've heard Blinken say recently, this was Hamas that kept rejecting it and holding back the negotiations. Anybody can say anything they want about this just being the right time for a ceasefire, or that Israel has finally applied enough pressure, or Hamas has taken enough losses. Let's be honest. This is the Trump effect, period. Now, at first, when Trump said that all hell was going to break loose if the hostages were not released, it seemed as if, and particularly in light of the fact that he has chosen an extraordinarily pro-Israel cabinet, that what he meant was that Iran and Hamas and Qatar and Turkey and Egypt and all the people who are on that side of the equation better release the hostages. Now, turns out that yes, that was half the message. It might have even been 60% of the message. But the other 40 to 50% of the message was to Israel. Do not mess up this deal. And Trump has literally threatened both sides that if either side prevents this deal from happening, there will be hell to pay. Now, let's go back to what I said about why right now the deal is being held up. Remember that after signing the deal, after Qatar announced to the world that the deal is done, after Trump announced to the world, after Biden took full credit for it, after all these things, Hamas added new demands. Okay? Some say there was something having to do with the Philadelphia corridor, and some people say it has to do with what Palestinian prisoners are going to be released. Today, it sounds like, the Prime Minister's office says it's about the prisoners, so I'm going to go on that. It's not really relevant. What's relevant is this. The world has already accepted and expects that this deal is a done deal. It isn't. Now, why does this matter? This actually happened last May as well, where the news told the world, oh, Hamas has agreed to this deal, sent it out to the press. The press announces that Hamas agreed to a deal, blah, blah, blah. And then, lo and behold, they add new stipulations. Now, that part went under the radar. Instead, what happens is it looks like Israel is the one who is reneging on the deal. And that is what Hamas is banking on again. So the world says or hears that Hamas and Israel sealed a deal yesterday. Now, the media doesn't want to tell you that Hamas decided to add new terms and conditions. So what does this do? It pushes Israel into a corner, and now all eyes are on Israel, where the news is just, oh, and Israel has not accepted the deal yet, as if Israel is the one holding it back. Okay? Now imagine if you signed a contract with somebody, and then after you signed the contract, after it was publicized to the world, I'm not sure why it'd be publicized to the world, the person on the other side decided to change that contract. You have every right to reject that contract at this point. By consistently holding Israel's feet to the fire and demanding more and more and more, now it's Israel that has to make the choice, to make the compromise, to stay in Trump's good graces. Now, to me, and again, there are complexities to this deal that not only do I not understand, but I'm not privy to. So I do want to talk about some of the other possibilities that are a lot more positive for incoming President Trump. But right now, as is on paper, in the news, it feels like this is a deal that's more about assuaging Trump's ego than creating actual peace and stability for Israel or, quite frankly, for the region. Keep in mind, Hamas has 98 Israeli hostages, but it has 2 million Gazan hostages. The Palestinian people are, for all intents and purposes, hostages to the same terrorist regime that Hamas regime as our Israeli hostages are. These are people, a whole strip of people, who, as the world has poured literally billions and billions of dollars into infrastructure to build schools for them and water systems for them and buildings and libraries and all the things, Hamas has taken all that money and used it instead to build terrorist infrastructure, as well as tunnels where Hamas can hide, but the people of Gaza need to stay outside. Where the Israeli attacks are, because Hamas purposely draws the IDF in to civilian populations, so that the only way that Israel has any chance of making progress in this war is by risking civilian casualties. Now, I encourage you to listen to my my discussion about 2 weeks ago on what is and is not genocide. If you have any confusion about what that word means, and also what is and actually has gone on in Gaza. After I'm done, I'll go ahead and tag that video in the description below. Now, let's talk about the actual hostage deal. I'm going to talk just first now just about the Israeli hostages, okay? So in the first phase of this deal, 33 hostages are meant to be released. Originally, it was 34, but one of the men on the list was found murdered in a tunnel with his son just about a week ago. So now we're down to 33 that are left on that list. As I mentioned before, At least 10 of these 33 are known to be deceased. Now, who is on this list? The Bibas children are on the list. Last week or this week, boy, every day these days feels like a year, it was announced that the Bibas children would be released on the first day. Today, it sounds as if that has changed, and now three females will be released instead. Now, again, I welcome the release of every single hostage, man, woman, or child. However, keep in mind that in the last hostage exchange, which was in November of 2023, okay, more than a year ago, the Bibas children were meant to be in that exchange as well, and Hamas wound up reneging on their part of the deal. We are all of humanity praying for the safe release of the Bibas children. So, the Bibas children, women, elderly, well, they call it elderly, it's over 50. I'm over 50. So anyway, elderly and the sick are in this list of the first 33. There's some contention about at least one or more of the people on the list who are male of IDF age, okay? So soldiers or not soldiers, there is some challenge with Hamas agreeing to their being on the list. Now, keep in mind that there is tremendous psychological warfare being played once again by Hamas by not telling us who will be released, when they will be released, or whether they are even alive. This is absolute torture, unmitigated torture for the families who are awaiting their loved ones. Now, when I think back to the complete and utter joy when the hostage deal occurred last November, watching each of these hostages, particularly the children, being released to their parents, it's so overwhelming. And there's nothing that I would not do to see that for all 98 hostages. The fact that at least 30 will be returning in body bags. I'm not sure if the families know which ones those are. The public certainly does not know. Is unbelievably, it's nauseating. I don't know another word for it. And I'm not even a hostage family. I cannot imagine what these waiting families are going through. And also this Schindler's List concept of like picking who will live and who will die, who will be released and who will stay in Gaza. And it's just as happy is not the word. There aren't words that exist. As we all will be for every hostage who is released alive. The complete and utter soul-shattering heartbreak for those who are left behind is unbearable. What do you do when you're a hostage family of a IDF-aged young man who is in captivity, who you know may literally never get out of Gaza? Do you fight for any hostages released at any price, as some people are fighting for? Or do you fight that we continue a maximum pressure campaign until Hamas agrees to release all 98? I hate to keep saying this, alive or dead, but those who are alive can come home and be healed, and those who have been murdered can have a proper burial. So, of the 33 that will be coming home in these first, so phase one is 6 weeks long, okay, 42 days, and it's just gonna be a slow drip of hostages. The first day, so far as I understand it, 3 will come home. The second day, 4 will come home, and then, that leaves 26 for the next 5 weeks, which will be about 5 a week at whatever trickle or pace that winds up being. And after which there'll be further negotiations in phase two to supposedly get the rest of the hostages released. And then in phase two, the rest of the living hostages released. And then in phase three to get, excuse me, the remains of those who have perished. Now that might sound really great. Like you're like, okay, great. By phase three, every single hostage is home. That's assuming that we get to phase three, because history has shown us that Hamas cannot get that far. And keep in mind that the hostages are their only bargaining chip. And quite frankly, the only thing that has stopped Hamas from being completely annihilated and their tunnels from being completely destroyed is that the IDF is taking all possible pains to ensure that they do not have hostages as civilian casualties. My fears for the Bibas family, the family that I think we're all holding out for and praying for. Now, if you're not familiar with the Bibas family, Kafir, the baby, is going to be 2 on Saturday in 2 days. He was abducted when he was 9 months old. His first and second birthdays both will be in captivity. His older brother, Ariel, is 5. They are the only 2 children left in Gaza. Everybody, I think, is familiar with the photo of their mother, Shiri, holding her 2 baby boys in a blanket to her breast as she was abducted. her husband, Yardan, was kidnapped separately. He is not with the rest of his family. For what it's worth, before this family was abducted, Shiri's parents were murdered in front of her, and Hamas even slaughtered the family dog. This is the face of pure evil. There's no other word for it. Now, in November of 2023, about a month and a half after the war started, if you consider October 7th the start of the war, Hamas claimed that Shiri, Ariel, and Kfir were killed. Now, there's been no proof that this is the truth. There's been no evidence, but there has also been no proof of life. Israel is going on the hope that it was just more psychological warfare, because Hamas took it one step further. They did not just tell the public that Shiri, Ariel, and Kfir had been murdered, but also they told it to Yardan, Shiri's husband and the boy's father, on camera so that they could watch him break down. The psychological torture to him and to the whole family is excruciating. My worry personally is that Shiri, Ariel, and Kfir, and Yardan will all be returned to Israel, but only Yardan will be alive. There have been certain indications, I think accidental, online, by people in the know, that perhaps this news about Shiri and Ariel and Kfir is in fact true. I can't imagine if Yardan comes home, that's the father, alone, how he will go on. The one thing that has struck me so deeply about all the photos and videos of the Bibas family that have been all over the internet is how much love and joy this family had. How wonderfully kind Yardan and Shiri are, and how much they absolutely love their children more than life itself. Even in the hostage photos, both Shiri and Yardan are holding a baby. So many prayers for the Bibas family. Perhaps all four will come home alive. They are all four on this first phase list. That would be amazing. Also on the list, among many others, are Shlomo Mansour, who is the oldest captive, who at 86 years old poses a threat to exactly no one. By day 475, he will still be in captivity. Now, just to make this more excruciating and to just point out how much this deal favors and coddles Hamas. Hamas actually is not going to even release a list of who is alive or dead in their captivity until day 7. Which means Israel may be signing this agreement, God forbid, with 0 live hostages. We do not know. So on day seven, we will theoretically, because everything dealing with Hamas is no more than theoretical until it actually happens, know who is alive and who is dead. Now, then what? Assuming that all 33 hostages are released, this is going to be in exchange for the number, again, I've seen different numbers, somewhere in the vicinity of 1,300 Hamas terrorists. Okay, this is just the first phase. Now, a lot of people are wondering how these numbers can possibly be calculated. That a baby or a grandfather in this scenario is worth 30 convicted terrorists, and a soldier, in this case, probably a female soldier, is worth 50 Hamas terrorists. I think to so many people who don't bother to really think about this exchange, it just seems like people for people. This is not people for people. These are convicted felons in exchange for absolutely innocent Israeli citizens. Completely innocent. Many of them peace activists, in fact. Where is this equation? How is this possible? It defies all logic, but it also goes back to what I said about the Gilad Shalit deal. When you set a precedent that you're willing to exchange 1,027 prisoners in exchange for one hostage, well, what do you think Hamas is going to ask for? You think they're going to ask for like a one-to-one or something like that? No. They know how much Israel values life and that they can get more and more and more out of this deal just because Israel is so desperate to bring the hostages home. Now, again, there's a lot of controversy about at what cost, because the cost could be absolutely tremendous. Again, the cost of the Gilad Shalit deal was October 7th. Sinwar came out in that deal and went back to Gaza to mastermind this massacre. I could say, not only the people who were killed and maimed and in all the things, I can't say all the words or I get banned on YouTube on October 7th and since then, but also the soldiers, all the families, and yes, the people of Gaza. All of these are casualties indirectly of the Gilad Shalit deal. So what happens? What happens when all these hardened terrorists, many of whom not only have blood on their hands, but are serving life sentences, just get returned? This is very complex. This is not just person for person. And by the way, when they talk about children in Israeli prisons, what they're talking about is teenage terrorists. Now, just because you're under 18, it doesn't make you an innocent civilian if you stab someone to death or shoot them or run them over with a car. So this is not just children for children. Keep in mind also, everybody fully accepts that Hamas might be returning a lot of these hostages, God forbid, even all of them in body bags. And yet, the prisoners in Israeli jails the convicted felons who actually deserve in many cases to be executed or subject to a death penalty will all be returned by Israel alive. I don't understand how people can't see how clearly Israel deals with this conflict, with this war, and with their enemy with the utmost level of morality versus the unbelievable savagery of the terrorists of Hamas. So, supposedly in this deal, most of the, you know, run-of-the-mill Palestinian prisoners who are released will be released back to either Judea Samaria, what some people call the West Bank, or Gaza, okay? Where no doubt they will be re-radicalized and put right back into the Hamas system of terror. There is some talk, and I say some talk, there's a lot of talk, apparently it's a term, but these things seem to be very, very fluid, that those with life sentences who are being released will be released to Qatar or Turkey, a quote-unquote safe distance away. But let this be a reminder. Why Qatar or Turkey? Because they are both state sponsors of terror. They support Hamas. They support Hezbollah. Don't be fooled by Qatar's facetious role as an quote-unquote independent mediator in these negotiations. Okay? They have been harboring Hamas terrorists for as long as Hamas has existed. And definitely don't be fooled by Turkey's membership in NATO, because there is a very clear path to being accepted into NATO and no real path to get somebody out. There's nothing about Turkey that behaves like a NATO ally. But just like the United Nations, that people seem to think is some altruistic, peace-loving body, it's not. It's overwhelmed by terrorist and communist nations. But Turkey also, people seem to think are just another Western nation. They're not. They're another terrorist state. And they're getting more and more radical as Erdogan, as his rule gets deeper and deeper and more intractable. So that's an overview of the hostage for terrorist exchange. Now, another aspect that's very troubling of this deal is that under this deal, in the first phase, 1 million Gazans are going to be allowed to return to the north, okay? Remember that northern Gaza is where all of this 10/7 occurred and where the primary Hamas headquarters was. And so they evacuated that area in the beginning of the war, and now they're just gonna let everybody go back, okay? So you might say, wonderful, great, they get to go home. Well, no, because keep in mind or understand, maybe you don't already fully know this, but ceasefire does not mean end of the war. It doesn't mean peace. It means there's a temporary pause. However, with 1 million Gazans returning to the north, it will be a de facto end of the war, because it will be nearly impossible for Israel to restart the war if they decide to do it the way that they have all along, which is to minimize all civilian casualties by evacuating all the people first. I don't, and most people don't see, the IDF actually re-evacuating 1 million people. As it is, people will be able to go back on foot, unchecked, so whatever they could carry. To me, this is still a problem because you can carry all sorts of things, including guns and mines and all sorts of armaments, but whatever. And that supposedly the cars will have to be checked. The chances that Hamas operatives will not flood in with the general populace are quite slim. Now, Israel does have some amazing like facial recognition software and procedures. But of course, with such a mass migration and, you know, people can wear things over their faces or headscarves or burqas, or it's very easy to go undetected in such a situation. As you may have heard as well, when it comes to Israel's presence in Gaza, Hamas also wants Israel to vacate the Philadelphia corridor. Some people said this was the last minute stipulation that Hamas added after signing the agreement. Some people said it has to do with what prisoners are going to be getting out. But either way, we do know that this is ultimately a demand to end the war. Now, if you don't know where the Philadelphia corridor is, some people call it the Philadelphia. It is basically the southern border on Gaza, which is the border between Gaza and Egypt. So Egypt, in theory, patrols the Egyptian side of this border. Up until 10/7, Hamas patrolled the Gaza side of the border. Now, it sounds quite reasonable, doesn't it? If Egypt is taking care of their side of the street, that Israel should not worry and just vacate and let whoever, it probably not Hamas, but whoever takes over Gaza, take care of their side of the street. It's not as simple as that. Yes, Egypt is meant to be a friend, quote unquote, of Israel, right? Technically, Israel and Egypt have a very famous peace agreement. And yet, all of the weaponry, all of the missiles and everything that has flooded into Gaza for militia and terrorist infrastructure from Iran has come through the Egyptian border. Now, you can easily say, oh, well, clearly that was smuggled in and Egypt did not know about it. That sounds reasonable, doesn't it? Oh, but wait, there's hundreds of terrorist tunnels also dug from Gaza right into Egypt? Right under Egypt's eyes? Of course Egypt knew that those tunnels were there for smuggling, and ultimately they facilitated this. But with a wink and a nod, we continue to soldier on, pretending that Egypt is actually a friend of Israel or a friend of the West. They are the ones facilitating the movement of arms and missiles into Gaza, and that is why Israel needs to maintain control of the Philadelphia corridor until a reasonable peacekeeping force can be brought in to monitor that. The Gazans have proven that they are not capable of monitoring it themselves. Quite the opposite. When they monitor that border, they're monitoring their ability to smuggle weapons. So Egypt again, I mean, boy, does this go deep. Egypt and Jordan, right, both have peace deals with Israel. And this is a very, very important part, right, because Egypt is on Israel's south and Jordan is on the west. And so Why did they come into peace deals with Israel? Well, largely it's because they get massive amounts of U.S. aid. And it behooves, or has behooved in the past, most nations to be an ally of the United States. Now here's the problem. In the Biden administration, the United States has lost an extraordinary amount of credibility in the world as being a world power or a superpower. Who has become more and more powerful, however? The axis of evil, right? Russia, China, Iran, North Korea. So Egypt and Jordan, who are very friendly with terrorists, though I won't say terrorist states themselves, have got to choose. They're at a juncture which team they want to be on. Now, to this extent, I think we're very lucky, we being Israel and its allies, that Trump did win and that there is a possibility of peace through power again. Because Egypt and Jordan during this war have been on the verge of canceling and have threatened to cancel their peace agreements with Israel and sacrificing their relationship with the United States, embedding that the axis of evil is going to come out on top at the end of all this, and they want to be on the winning team. I believe that now that Trump won, and as of Monday, will be the leader of America, and I will argue the free world, that Egypt and Jordan will come back into lockstep and do what they can to stay in his good graces, which will include acting as, what's the nicest way I could put this, non-terrorist states when it comes to Israel. Now, Israel and Jordan haven't been all bad. They have actually stepped up to help Israel when Iran launched missiles. So there has still been some cooperation. But those are two deals on the brink. Okay, let's just briefly jump forward. Let's assume we make it through the first 6 weeks, okay? 42 days of the ceasefire and 33 hostages come home, okay? Phase two of the deal, the rest of the living hostages come home, and in phase three, is the remaining, the already deceased hostages, okay? Now, here's where things get wonky once again. Considering that Hamas's negotiation tactics have always been the same, which is to drag their feet, to throw in wrenches, and also to keep changing their demands, they do not negotiate in good faith. And going back to my original premise, we should not be negotiating with them at all. But since we are, here's the other disturbing element of this ceasefire. In this agreement, after, I think it's something like 16 days or something, but after, let's say phase one, after 42 days, if there is not all the mechanisms in place to go into phase two, Israel has to continue, and Hamas, in theory, has to continue this ceasefire as long as negotiations continue. Now, what qualifies as negotiation? Is negotiation just showing up at Doha with completely unreasonable demands? I'm not being facetious. I mean, literally, what is going to qualify as negotiations? Because Hamas has proven over and over again that no matter what is negotiated, it's not enough. They always want more. And so then what? So we just have negotiations forever until the day that Hamas decides to break the ceasefire, because that's how it always ends. Okay, before I get into sort of the conclusions of all this, I want to talk about some positive things that might be hidden in the woodwork that we are not privy to. We, meaning me and the general public, and we could only guess. So it is possible, it's very possible, that this deal, yes, was forced upon Netanyahu and the Israelis. That's not possible, that's actually true. But it is possible that what we don't see is that it also comes with some sort of back-end guarantees from Trump. For example, maybe Trump has said, we're going to give this conclusive ceasefire to Hamas, but I'm going to give you unlimited, you Israel, unlimited support, whether that's military or diplomatic, to go in and destroy Iran and its nuclear infrastructure. Okay. Now, when I say military support, keep in mind, I don't mean boots on the ground. I just mean the bombs and the equipment that Israel will need to go in and unseat the Iranian regime. That is very, very likely. Keep in mind that Israel disarmed Iran of its air defenses, so they are basically a sitting duck. So if Israel wants to go in, or wanted to go in the months past, they could and could have, once again, the extraordinary restraint that Israel has shown in this war against the terrorists, really, of Iran has been remarkable, bordering on ridiculous. But why would this matter? It's because if there is no Iran, there is no Hamas. Okay? Hamas gets all of its funding from Iran. So if we wind up with a Gaza that still has whatever, thousands of Hamasniks in it, but a different ruling party, and none of these Hamasniks can get a hold of like a gun or a knife or any mean or missile launchers or any means of wreaking any sort of havoc, we sort of win, right? So that might be one option. But keep in mind that once again, if this option is in fact what is going to occur, that U.S. will give the full support to Israel to go in and destroy the Iranian nuclear structure and also hopefully to unseat the mullahs, once again, this is leaving it up to the teeny tiny Jewish state to do the dirty work for the entire free world, just like this whole war. Just like this whole war. And you know what happens? Israel fights the war on terror for the West, and then they get relentlessly vilified by the West and the rest of the world for doing it. The very people that Israel is protecting are the very people who have undermined them on the world stage. So it will be wonderful if Trump gives Israel the go-ahead, and ultimately, I understand Trump does have to put America first, but Iran is a threat to America just like it's a threat to Israel. Iran's favorite chant is death to Israel, death to America. Or maybe it's death to America, death to Israel, but whatever it is, it's two sentences, it's a couplet. It goes together, and Iran's sights are far bigger than the Middle East, and they do present a threat to the United States, particularly if they do get the nuclear power that they are so very close to obtaining. Now, right now in Gaza, the Palestinians are not only claiming victory in this war, but they're already promising the next 10-7. The leaders are saying that the October 7th Al-Aqsa flood will be taught for generations to come as the greatest victory and as something that they will revere for all time. They have no shame about the terror that they unleashed and the horrifying, inhumane, animalistic, savage carnage that they unfurled on Israel that day. And as they claim victory, I just want to say, Israel is never allowed to win a war. They are the only nation that every war, which has always been a defensive war, the world steps in and says, now, maybe you could get back to the status quo, but we are not going to let you do what it takes to actually win. Now, what happens if Hamas stays in power? Well, just look at the next generation. It's all over the internet. Palestinian kids and teens celebrating in the streets and calling for death to all Jews. Not that they're so happy that the war is over and that they can be safe again, but they're happy that they live to see the day that hopefully they will be able to massacre Jews again. The celebrations over this deal in Israel are celebrations in hopes of live hostages coming home and in hopes of peace. There's a stark difference here, and it is a difference between good and evil. Are there good people in Gaza? I can guarantee you there are. Are there bad people in Israel? Sure, I could also guarantee you they are, because people are people. But you could only judge a civilization by its most overarching morality. The morality in Gaza is to kill Jews wherever they could find them. The morality in Israel is for peace and to fight for peace when necessary. Now, assuming this deal goes through and all signs are pointing to it will go through because Trump says that it will and therefore it must. Assuming it goes through, what does this hold for the future? Well, keep in mind, Hamas and the Palestinians have broken every single ceasefire ever. Keep in mind, there was a ceasefire in place on October 6, 2023. Keep in mind, there was a hostage deal and a ceasefire in November 2023. And if you go all the way back to the establishment of Hamas 2005-2006, every single conflict has been started by Hamas. Every single ceasefire has been ended by Hamas. I think the chances of all three phases of this deal occurring as planned are slim to none. I hope I'm wrong. There are certain things in this world that I will very, 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 very happily be very, very wrong about, and that is one of them. We'll see how many phases we get through before the ceasefire is broken. In the best of all possible worlds, perhaps we get through all three. That would mean all 98 hostages are released, Israel withdraws from Gaza, and Gaza is left to rebuild. In a perfect world, they use the billions of dollars this time not for terrorist infrastructure, but for human infrastructure. In a perfect world, a demilitarized Gaza can actually join. It sounds funny. I'm talking about a perfect world here. The Abraham Accords someday. Ultimately, the way I've always seen it, peace is actually easier than war. I don't understand why they keep choosing war. Now, a ceasefire, as always in these situations, because Israel is such a dominant military over the terrorist infrastructure of Hamas, is just a gift to Hamas. It's giving them the ability to regroup, resituate, and rebuild. And it's their choice. It's their choice if they want to rebuild as citizens of the world, or if they decide that they are going to rebuild as yet another terrorist state. Meaning that their attempt at 10/7 may happen in months, it may happen in years, it may happen in decades. But they have already sworn it is going to happen again. Or at least they're going to try. I don't know that Israel will ever, ever allow something like this to happen again. Sometimes you only have to be woken up once. In conclusion, am I hopeful about this deal? Anything that brings home all 98 hostages gives me tremendous hope and tremendous, I want to say joy. I'm just praying that most of them come home alive. We know at least 30 are deceased. If that means 68 are alive and can come home and be healed, I'll take it. But remember that ceasefire doesn't actually mean peace. And in order to have peace, two sides have to want it. I hope that there's a day when the citizens of Gaza want it. Because honestly, peace is a very, very beautiful thing.